CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Victor Davis Hanson, the historian and classicist, the author of The Second World Wars, How the First Global Conflict Was Fought and Won. Wars, wars. I emphasize that irony because today we're going to entertain part of the story, which is Russia's wars. Russia's wars with the West, with Poland, with the Baltic states, Russia's wars with Germany, with Hitler, Russia's wars with Japan, different parts of Russia. And the larger question that Victor addresses in a post about mythologies of the Second War, did the Soviet Union win the Second World War? Victor, a very good evening to you. The Soviet Union was completely directed, completely, totally directed by Djugashvili, Joseph Stalin, and eventually his aide in deviltry, Molotov. However, the assumption these many decades is that it was the Soviets who absorbed the brunt of the Wehrmacht's might and rolled the Wehrmacht back in a series of apocalyptic battles until it crashed into Berlin and destroyed what was left of the Hitlerites. So is the Soviet Union the winner of the war? Did we stand back and hold its coat while it did the heavy work? Good evening to you, Victor.
Good evening. Winner and loser, because of Stalin's treacherous pact with Hitler that empowered Hitler and gave him 2 years to even more fully rearm and to take advantage of the aid in fuel and foods and minerals and ores that Stalin gave them. He lost over 20 million Russians, probably 11 million soldiers and 10 million or maybe more civilians. And so that was a terrible loss. He won the war in the sense that his dream of having a buffer between the West and the Soviet Union, in this case, the annexation of most of all of Eastern Europe under communist governments that were loyal to Stalin, that was a success. So that's not what the war was fought for. Remember, the war was fought for over the principle, at least in Europeans, the autonomy of Poland by extension to correct the aggrandizement in Czechoslovakia. And it ended up by ensuring that very region of Eastern Europe would be totalitarian in a way that it was supposedly not to be by Hitler, but it would be by Stalin.
You write correctly that to calibrate the Russian claim that it won the war, you can't get past the sacrifice of the Russian people. So I do not dismiss that, but I want to go to your mention of the pact with Hitler. This is sometimes known as the Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact, although they were tools of Stalin and Hitler. Stalin signed that pact because he had ambitions to pick off the pieces of the old Russian Empire. He especially, I'm told, hated the Poles because they defeated the Soviets in the 1920s. He also wanted the Baltic states back. The amazing thing, Victor, is that that was overlooked once Hitler attacked Stalin. But it should not be part of the story that we ignore. We have to pay attention to that because, once again, Russia is threatening the Baltic states and Poland. Stalin's aggression towards those peoples, claiming that it was the Russian Empire for about 20 minutes after the revolution, that was a crime, a war crime, that the U.S. was ready to condemn before it forgot about it. It's an incredible feat that the Roosevelt administration both sanctioned Stalin and then welcomed him as an ally.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with Pearl Harbor. And by that, I mean, we had not been in the war from September 1st of 1939 to December 11th of 1941. And we felt this was a continental war. We had failed in World War One to keep the peace. And there wasn't a bit of difference, we felt, because we didn't know about the Holocaust. And we didn't know about Stalin's, really, we had been lied to about the persecutions and mass murdering of the 20s, 30s, and 40s, early 40s. But nevertheless, we felt that these were two versions of evil, and they were fighting each other after June 22nd of 1941. So we kept out of it for 6 months. And a lot of people thought, you know, they said to themselves, who's worse? And they especially were angry at the Russians because they had empowered the Nazi monster. For 2 years, when France was overrun and Britain was being bombed and 50,000 Londoners were being killed. The stuff of that machine that were killing Western democracies was by intent coming from Joseph Stalin's communism. And so we were intent to just keep out of it. And then all of a sudden Pearl Harbor happened and, you know, we didn't know what we were going to do. And the next thing we knew, we didn't declare war on Adolf Hitler. It's a legitimate question to ask ourselves after Pearl Harbor, would we have declared war? But once he declared war on us, then the enemy becomes the friend, and the Soviet Union was locked in this. And we said to ourselves, wow, they've got 300 German divisions. They invaded with almost 3.5-4 million men. And our army was just a few years ago smaller than Portugal's, and we got this huge imperial navy, and there's, you know, 15 million people being killed in China, and the Chinese are going to be lost, and all of the Pacific is overrun, and the old colonial rich natural resources of the Dutch East Indies and Southeast Asia and now Malaysia, they're all going to be in the hands of the Japanese. We got to stop this. And so we kind of outsourced the ground war in Europe, Western Europe, I should say Eastern, the Western part of the Soviet Union to the Red Army. And then we should never say, John, that we didn't do anything. We did a lot more than Soviets did. I know they lost a terrible 20 million and they killed probably 2 out of every 3 Wehrmacht soldiers, but they did not fight a surface war on the ocean. They did not fight a submarine war. They had no strategic bombing component. They had no lend-lease. They did not supply anybody other than themselves, although they had been quite willing to supply the Nazis. And they didn't fight in Italy. They didn't fight in North Africa. They did not fight the Japanese until 2.5 weeks before the war ended. And so our GDP at the end of 1944 was larger than the Soviet Union, Germany, what was left of Italy and Japan combined. So we have to keep that in mind, because the Soviet revisionism says, well, we killed more Germans and we lost more than everybody, and therefore we won the war. It's not true.
I want to press the case on the war on Finland that Stalin launched before we got into the war. This is 1940-41. There's an anecdote told in a new book by Sean McMeekin, which praises your book, The Second World Wars. The anecdote goes like this. 3 Soviet soldiers were captured by the Finns, and 2 of them were saying their prayers because they thought they were going to be executed immediately. The Finns told them, not only are we not going to execute you, you're poor and you're starving, and we're going to take care of you because you were forced into this. We were machine gunning you as you charged across the snow without weapons. And the 2 men couldn't believe they weren't to be executed. And they didn't believe it. And they said, you mean you're not going to shoot us? And they said, no, we're not going to shoot you. And they said, well, give us a gun. Give us a gun then, because we want to shoot him. And they pointed to the political officer who was captured with them. Stalin's army was a terrible army, Victor, in the Finnish war. He forced, it's staggering to think how many men died or were abandoned, or they set gasoline on the wounded because they were so cruel to their own peoples. That was Stalin's army. That was not an army ready to defeat the Wehrmacht. It wasn't until the U.S. and Britain, at great risk to their merchant fleets, you know this, supplied Stalin in 1942, that he had the ability to withstand the Wehrmacht.
I think it's really important to remember that it wasn't just 20 to 25% of all of its war GDP, all of its war material, was supplied by Britain and the United States, but we synchronized that aid. We went to Stalin and his commissars and said, what do you need? What do you do well? Well, we have artillery and we have steel, but we don't have aviation. We don't have radios. We don't have trucks. We don't have motorized capability. So what the United States did was they said, move your factories on the other side of the Urals and we'll make up all the things in your economy that will allow you to focus on making better and more numerous tanks and have trucks in the way that the Wehrmacht was supplied by horses. And so we really aided it. And then the third thing we did is we said to Stalin, we will handle the Japanese. And they had been terrified, even though they'd signed a non-aggression pact in April of 1941 with the Imperial Japanese government. They'd been terrified of some kind of landing in Vladivostok or an eastern campaign that would have confronted them with a two-front war. And they moved all of these 200,000 cracked Siberian troops to save Moscow from Arbin Group Center in early December on the supposition that very soon Japan would not be attacking the Soviet Union, would be attacking Britain and the United States. And, you know, it's very ironic, John, that they made a non-aggression pact with the Japanese they never broke until 2 weeks before the war. They made a non-aggression pact with Germany and by extension with Italy that they never broke. They made pacts with the United States and Britain, the benefactors, which they broke. All of the post-war agreements they broke. And so they despised us. They had more admiration for the Nazis and the fascists and the militarists than they had for the Western democracies, their own allies.
So I ask the question again. Does Stalin lose without the U.S. and Britain supplying him? Or does he win this war by being bloody-minded? What is your measure today, Victor?
I would say if you define supplies also by a much reviled bombing campaign that kept most of the Luftwaffe by 1943 or 44 out of the Soviet Union and devoted to attacking our plane. And I think the transference of 10,000 flak guns to be used as flak guns were some, which had otherwise been some of the best anti-tank guns, especially 88 millimeter artillery. Yes, had we not had a bombing campaign and been fighting in Italy and North Africa, and had not been supplying them, they wouldn't have lasted. And they said, they knew that. And I think Goering and Goebbels and Himmler and all of the Nazi apparat said to Hitler, this is incredible. These are backward troops, but they have more motorized capability. 90% of their divisions are motorized. And we depend, 90% of ours depend on horses and obsolete vehicles, mostly horses. And everybody said, well, they have GM trucks, 400,000 of them.
Right.
So their divisions were quite mobile in a way that the Nazis weren't.
I'm speaking to Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution, the author of The Second World Wars. The first global conflict was how the first global conflict was fought and won. When we come back, was Britain a worthy partner? Was part of the alliance that helped the victory, or was it weak? Did the U.S. prop Britain up? A mythology. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.